somewhere else in Latin America, Asia, Africa, Oceania, somewhere in the world, we'd love to hear about it.
This interview with Anita Bouchard, etc., came about because her work was blogged about in the New York Times.
Rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it. Tonight, what heights we'll hit.
Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXE Acra 90.7 FM.
Got questions about technology, cybersecurity? Whether it's a remote car starter or jellyfish, try your luck at stumping our panel on the Thingularity radio program. Just send your questions to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. That is CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. And one of our many interns will be electroshocked into inducing an answer for your listening pleasure. Listen to the Thingularity radio program every first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when NSI delivers their spin on ambient sounds. Living by Lanterns draws inspiration from Sun Ra, and Ramin Djawadi scores with an epic soundtrack. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dolores Prescott of Jamaica, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You have the already global networks. So my argument is very simple. The present media is too large and wasteful. From now on, we should think about the more smaller media to diverse our culture and community. I have different idea on airwave. Airwave belong to the every people, everybody. Not to the states or a government. Okay, I will make the transmitter now.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Alexandria Zizou reports in the Times Union that last winter's mild temperatures and below-average snowfall have meant more bees, wasps, and hornets this summer. Betty Jean Jansen of Hudson Valley Pest Control said, and I quote, "We have been in business over 50 years and I don't ever remember anything like this. It's overwhelming," end quote. Yellow jackets are especially prevalent locally right now. Dan Gilring, an entomologist at Cornell Cooperative Extension, Suffolk County, said, and I quote, "Unlike most ground nesting bees, yellow jackets can be very defensive around nests and their numbers are highest at this time of year. The workers are often encountered foraging around trash bins and around picnic sites attracted to food materials," end quote. New York has a list of swarm catchers in every county that can relocate excess bees. But too many bees is considered a good thing by many, as the latest Empire State Native Pollinator Survey found that about one-third of pollinator species are at high risk of becoming extinct in New York. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Tara Sutter in The Hill reports that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee put out a video September 7th attacking five New York Republican House members, including Representative Pat Molinaro, for not moving to expel Representative George Santos. In May, Molinaro, Anthony D'Esposito, Brandon Williams, Mike Lawler, and Nick LaLota all voted to refer a resolution of Santos' expulsion to the House Ethics Panel instead of voting to expel the congressperson. Santos faces 13 federal criminal charges related to alleged financial crimes and has been caught lying hundreds of times. Of course, Molinaro and other Republicans also support former President Donald Trump, who faces 91 criminal charges and has been caught lying thousands of times. Molinaro campaign advisor Dave Catalfarmo said, and I quote, "It's political malpractice that Washington Democrats are spending money to remind voters of Molinaro bashing Santos while the Biden-Hochul migrant crisis is overwhelming the state," end quote. Read more about this story in The Hill. Jeanette Wolfberg reports for the Upstater that construction on the redevelopment of Bliss Towers in Hudson won't begin until next fall. The Hudson Housing Authority runs the income-restricted Bliss Towers and Columbia Apartments with 135 apartments, but only 106 of them currently rentable. Mount Co. Construction and Development Corporation Executive Vice President John Mado said of his firm's planned work on the project, and I quote, "We want to make sure that when we finish, we'll have improved people's quality of life," end quote. Hudson Housing Authority Executive Director Jeffrey Dodson said he hopes the new facilities can double the number of apartments to 270. There is also a proposal to close State Street between where two new apartment buildings will go. Read more about this story in the Upstater. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
From Alabama to Florida, the fight for the right to vote continues. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. In May of 1901, 150 white men gathered in Montgomery, Alabama, to rewrite their state's constitution. They elected John Knox, a prominent lawyer, to chair the convention. Knox said in his opening speech, "What is it that we want to do? Why, it is to establish white supremacy in this state. We must establish it by law, not by force or fraud." He added, "There is no higher duty resting upon us but to protect the sanctity of the ballot in every portion of the state," he said. The new Constitution formalized the racism inflicted on black Alabamians, stripping them of the right to vote and further entrenching Jim Crow segregation. Many of the remarkable achievements of the civil rights movement were forged in Alabama. The 1965 Voting Rights Act followed the Selma to Montgomery march earlier that year. The population of Lowndes County, Alabama, was 80% black, yet not one of those black residents was registered to vote. Last November, over 120 years after the ratification in 1901 of Alabama's racist constitution, voters finally replaced it. Yet today, the white supermajorities that control both houses of Alabama's legislature, along with Alabama's white Republican Governor Kay Ivey, continue to disenfranchise black voters. Racist redistricting of Alabama's congressional districts is one ploy. In 2021, Alabama lawmakers gerrymandered the state's congressional map, reducing what should have been two majority black districts to one. Civil rights and voting rights groups sued, and a federal judge rejected the map, declaring it in violation of the Voting Rights Act. The U.S. Supreme Court agreed with the judge, ordering the map to be redrawn. The legislature drew a new map, but defied the Supreme Court, keeping only one majority black congressional district. This second gerrymandered map was again rejected, this time by a panel of three federal judges, two of whom were appointed by Trump. Stating in their order that they were deeply troubled by the state ignoring the court's authority, they appointed a special master and a cartographer to draw a map that Alabama will be required to use for the upcoming 2024 election. Similar court battles to preserve the voting rights of black citizens are being waged across the South, with lawsuits in Georgia, Tennessee, Louisiana, and Florida. In Florida, Republican governor and presidential hopeful Ron DeSantis vetoed the most recent map drafted by the legislature, forcing the adoption of his own. DeSantis's map was tossed out by a judge for being racially gerrymandered.
DeSantis and those with him, they don't want to talk about the real record. That's why they redistrict illegally.
Bishop William Barber, founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School, said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
Racist voter suppression creates death, because when you suppress the right to vote and you stack and pack and bleach black voters, you allow extremists to get elected who then, once they get elected, they block health care, they block living wages, they block addressing poverty. And when you do those things, people die. Bad public policy creates death. Racist rhetoric and division can create a context of death, give people the license to kill. All of it is deadly.
Bishop Barber was responding to yet another deadly mass shooting, this one in Jacksonville, Florida. On Saturday, August 26th, a white supremacist shot and killed three black people at a Dollar General store, then killed himself. The shooter's semi-automatic rifle had swastikas drawn on it. Law enforcement has stated decisively the massacre was motivated by the shooter's racism. News coverage of the mass shooting was overwhelmed when Hurricane Idalia struck Florida, but was not forgotten in Jacksonville's black community.
This hurricane of racism that we've been dealing with in the Jacksonville community is not new.
Rodney Hearst, civil rights leader, historian, and author from Jacksonville, said on Democracy Now!, as a teenager, he led sit-ins at segregated lunch counters in Jacksonville. On August 27, 1960, in what became known as Axe Handle Saturday, the young nonviolent protesters were attacked by a mob of 200 whites armed with axe handles and baseball bats. The Dollar General shooting took place as Hearst and others were planning to mark the 63rd anniversary of that attack. In Washington, D.C., thousands were commemorating the 60th anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington, when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. The struggles of a century can be wiped out with the stroke of a pen. Whether it's erasing black history from state curricula, to gerrymandering state maps, to purging voter rolls and other methods of disenfranchising voters of color. All this is happening now in state legislatures across the country. It will take a force more powerful, the power of the people, to turn back this tide. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it will be a mostly cloudy Saturday with a temperature high near 80 degrees and a light and variable wind becoming east at around 6 miles an hour in the afternoon. Tonight, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 7 p.m. Then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 7 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 67 degrees and a calm wind becoming north at around 5 miles per hour after midnight. On Sunday, there'll be a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. The temperature high will be around 70 degrees with a north wind at around 6 miles per hour becoming south in the afternoon. And on Sunday night, showers and possibly a thunderstorm with a temperature low of around 65 degrees. And on Monday, a chance of showers, then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 76 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia Counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Adelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves. Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and just beneath me, we're listening to Untitled Radio, Futile Fertile, from Chicago artist Leah Cole, who is joining us here in the studio right now. Leah, welcome to Wave Farm.
Thank you.
Oops. Now I think we can hear you.
Thank you.
Tell us, you are based in Chicago, and let's see, your Bandcamp says you're a cellist, composer, and sound artist whose work centers on curiosity and patience, an exploration of the mundane and profound possibilities of sound. Would you like to explain that?
I can a little bit, for sure. Just trying to check all the boxes of what I could possibly
describe myself as. I am classically trained as a cellist, but I've gotten really interested in kind of the mundane sounds around us, one of which is the radio. And that takes a lot of time. So patience is very important.
It takes a lot of time to listen to the radio?
It takes a lot of time to pay attention, I think.
Deep listening, huh?
Yeah, something a lot, maybe. Yeah.
So you've been putting out these albums the past couple of years and working with radio in your work as a cellist and sound composer. How do you incorporate radio into your work?
In two ways. I use it as a kind of library of samples. I often record live radio, which again takes a lot of time. And then I use samples of it that I choose. The piece that you were just playing is a series of long recordings of radio static that I took in northern Wisconsin in a place where there's almost no audible radio signal. It's mostly static. So I use it for samples, but I also use it in live performance. I'm an improviser, and I have a couple of radios that I use just as instruments.
And what bands do you like?
What bands do I like?
I mean, radio bands. Oh. Frequencies. What frequencies do you like? I'm sorry, I didn't realize how
that I was question... like, that's a bit of a non sequitur.
Yes. What radio bands do you like?
I just use the AM, FM. AM is fun for, you know, people saying strange things.
It's a little noisier, right?
It's a little noisier, too. Yeah, there's some really fun drones. A lot of, like, B major... It's fun, but FM is also great.
And are you interested more in the sounds between stations or the sounds of stations or both?
Definitely both. But I have gotten really interested in like all the things that you think aren't interesting, like, you know, someone talking about the limited time offer at McDonald's and all the things that kind of mark the time that we're in a less obviously interesting way.
What do you think draws you to... sounds that don't sort of stand out in the foreground? You know, like right now, if you're listening closely, there's two people talking, but there's also like a air conditioning fan going on in the background.
Yeah, there's several nice little hums going on.
The 60-second hum of the electricity and the, you know, outlets. You're drawn to those sounds, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. It does sound like that. I think that in its best form, that's about kind of like a voraciousness for being alive. You know, as much experience as I can have of where I am as possible, I try to get that. Which maybe sounds like a weird thing to say about air conditioner hums, but I do actually feel like when I'm in that space, it enhances that experience of presence.
And certainly when it's this hot, it enhances that experience of presence too, right?
That's true.
And then you are here specifically this week because you, I guess we're announcing this on the air. You are the new Wavefarm Radio Art Fellow.
Yes.
So what does that mean to you? And how did you get to here? How did you find out about Wavefarm? And how did you get to be a Wavefarm Radio Art Fellow?
I'm really thrilled to be here. It's I said it this morning in a meeting, in an orientation meeting, that it feels like Disneyland if I liked the idea of Disneyland. But I've been working with the radio as an instrument. So I had like six or seven people send me this application. You should do this. You should do this. You should know about this organization. So I've known about you guys for a few years, and I'm really...
I think we only discovered you like in the last year or two. But,
glad it's a mutual relationship
but
now.
But we have featured your work a lot in the past year or so, you've only been putting out these records like 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah. I had really defined my practice as a collaborative practice, but then the pandemic happened, and that became more difficult. Collaborating,
at least in person,
difficult.
Yes.
Yeah. So I decided to see what I sound like when I'm working alone, and started putting out these albums.
And the radio became the collaborator?
Yes, actually. there's a wonderful quality of, you know, you never know what you're going to get with another human being. And actually the radio has a little bit of that quality too.
And you improvise live in different cities around the country. So you get a sort of taste of the radio soundscape in different places, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was doing a piece recently that included specifically the classical radio station. So every time I got to a new city, I would have to, you know, look up what that was and have that experience.
Yeah, as someone who's improvised with live radio before, the classical stations can be really fun to work in.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of always sounds good.
Yeah, it can work with anything, sort of. Talk stations can be like that, too, because you can add a layer of discourse on top of whatever sounds you're doing. And then I would think from listening to your albums, it would seem like a rock station is not really the thing that you focus in on too much.
Not so much, but it can be quite fun. You know, sometimes I get a little classic rock and just decide to keep it there for a minute.
What projects do you have? What are you going to do as a radio fellow? What have you been? You're been in the library all day?
Yeah, it's a great library here. So I guess there are three parts of the fellowship. There's a research element. There's a huge archive here, and I'm going to be looking through that archive and adding to it with my own contributions, not of my own compositions, but other artists that I'm learning about. And then there's an engagement portion where I'll be leading a workshop related to my work and my interest in the radio as a collaborator, as you mentioned earlier. And then I'll be making a new piece to be transmitted here.
All right, so we'll all listen forward to that.
Yeah.
We often ask people in your seat if they have an early radio experience that they remember, like from childhood. Like I listened to Baltimore Oriole games with a little transistor radio under my pillow as a kid. Do you have any sort of story like that?
I do, actually two. One is listening to my grandma listening to this preacher. Like, she would have solo time in her bathroom when she permed her hair or curled her hair in the mornings, and she would listen to this preacher, and it was like, I wasn't even particularly interested in what he was saying, but it was about my grandma having this special time to herself that was like, you know, lady time. She had seven kids and numerous grandkids.
So she didn't get much time to herself.
Exactly. So that was her special thing. And then also, I do remember as like a young, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 year old, like, and beyond, but especially in that time, like just searching through the radio for a song that I liked. I didn't have a lot of CDs, so I was like, you know, I can't even remember what the song would be, but yeah, I've
you're younger than me, so you probably didn't record songs on a cassette deck off the radio.
Oh, I did do a little bit.
You did?
Of that.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I also, with my friends, would sometimes make radio shows on cassette. Like, we would just make up news and make up weather, and so.
I did similar things. That's why I'm here, I think.
Sounds like you're fulfilling the dream.
But it also sounds like you were doing what you're doing now, listening intently to the radio and recording some things, mm-hmm. maybe not to perform with later, but you were playing with them, sort of, right?
Totally. Yeah, we're just doing the same thing our whole lives. Which is honestly pretty exciting to me.
You know, doing what you wanted to do when you were 8 sounds like a great plan for everyone.
Totally.
What do you have coming up? Are you on a tour now? Or?
I'm on a little tour, yeah. I'm going down to New York to play at Roulette in Brooklyn on Thursday, which is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is Thursday.
Tomorrow is, yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm also participating in a kind of a movement performance also at Roulette on Saturday. And then I'll be at, in Philadelphia at Jerry's on Front on Sunday night.
Woohoo! We love that place too.
Yeah.
All right. We've been speaking with Leah Cole, a Chicago sound artist who is the new Wavefarm radio art fellow. Anything you want to that we leave out? You want to mention?
No.
We're gonna. Can you pick a song from your new album, "The Ceiling Reposes," which that we can go out on? Which one do you want to?
Ooh. How about "Sit on the Floor and Wait for Storms," since it's so hot? I think
it's there it is. I see it. Yes, it's number 2.
They're all long.
I'm missing it. All right. Here is "Sit on the Floor and Wait for Storms" from Leah Cole. Thank you, Leah, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. things.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when NSI delivers their spin on ambient sounds. Living by Lanterns draws inspiration from Sun Ra, and Ramin Djawadi scores with an epic soundtrack. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
And now we are, the studio is even more full. We still have John Sturman here.
Yeah.
Who, do I hear you?
Yep.
Oh, I do hear you, yes. Who's going to be taking over some of the Thursday afternoon show responsibilities while Tom DiPietro and Cilla Graham are busy running for office. And Anna Friz is still here, which we heard her Revenant piece the last hour. And now we're being also joined by Lisa Schoenberg. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to check beforehand. Who arrived today from Troy, mm-hmm. and is our current artist in resident here at Wave Farm. And we just wanted to welcome Lisa and see what you're up to. So first, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here for the next week or so, doing a project focused on ants and their communication and their interaction with the environment. And I'm looking into cellular frequencies and how they might be reaching their nests and creating devices and implements to reduce the amount of cell frequencies that reach their nests.
So what are cell frequencies?
So like 5G kind of and lower cellular frequencies between like 30 megahertz and 3 gigahertz-ish, even higher, that our cell phones receive and that our cell phones send. And I'm not like some conspiracy theorist of any sort with the I'm not scared of 5G or anything, but I'm really interested in ants and insects, and that's the core of my work, is insects and sound. So I started just thinking about it, like how those frequencies might actually affect their bodies. Because of the size and the higher frequencies, and just it's a gesture towards just paying more attention to them and how our activities affect them, and more than any sort of factual like or causal statement about the frequencies. But I'm going to create these situations where our cell phone frequency and cell phone communication near their nests is reduced or impeded, and then we can listen to them. I'll amplify their sound at those sites. So that's what I'm gonna. That's the plan.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Let me ask: do we know the science in terms of what frequencies ants do communicate on and can receive?
I think they use walkie-talkies mostly.
Well, they don't.
Well, they have to use really little ones, but yeah.
Well, they're not using radio frequencies. They're using sound. You know, they communicate with vibratory sound. A lot of ants communicate with vibratory sound that they sense through their legs and their antenna. So it's this different set of frequencies than the cell frequencies. So it's not really is the cell frequency in the same range as their sound, but more like, would it affect them physically and the spaces they live in physically because the wavelengths are so much shorter?
Mm-hmm.
And so it would affect their communication, it would affect everything that they're doing. They communicate a lot through vibratory sensing, but also through airborne detection of sounds. But then also most people know about the chemical communication that they use, but there's also a lot of acoustic communication. Mm-hmm.
They transmit chemicals to communicate with each other?
Yeah. So they leave them pheromones. On the path. They leave pheromones on the paths that they walk. They share chemicals with each other by touch. Then they also communicate through sound to a certain distance. So,
and yeah. How do scientists know what ants hear, or you know, like ants' ears like?
So they don't have ears. They have actually they're.
It's just antenna.
So that it's not it's. It's hairs. like we have in our ears. They're hairs that are the sensors that are in these concentrated sensorial organs that are in the antenna and in the legs. So, and they sense vibration. Well, there's this argument in the ant community about whether, or a debate, an argument about whether there's
right wing ants and left wing ants.
No, it's just there's.
It's not the ant community. It's the people who study ants.
Yeah, it's the people. It's the myrmecology community. So most myrmecologists have.
Myrmecologists.
Yeah,
like
those
that
are
word.
People that study ants.
That's so, a great word, right?
Yeah. And most of them think that the ants only detect sound through vibration. But then a smaller group of myrmecologists, including myself, think that there's also airborne detection of sound. But it's primarily these same sensors in the antenna and the legs that are picking up the sound. That's what we think. Of course, we can't know for certain, but they do these experiments, and people I've been working with have been doing these experiments too. And like, you know, you only can know so much, but it's what we think is going on.
And you've worked with all different kinds of ants, like Brazilian ants and American ants. And
mainly Brazilian. Actually, I do live in New York, but a lot of my work has been in Brazil in a collaboration with some entomologists.
How are their ants are different?
Their ants, they just have so many more ants. The ants are more abundant and also more diverse and do like have a greater diversity of behaviors. And then part of the biggest reason for that is that the ants can be active all year round, right? Because of the tropical climate.
What do they do here in the winter? They go underground and
yeah, and usually the workers chill. And stuff don't even, in most species, the workers, they just like die before, you know. And then there'll be like new queens or like larval or pupal forms of ants overwintering. But it really varies. So
it's a matriarchal society?
It's a matriarchal society. And the males are only produced as reproductive. So there's like a smaller amount of males produced than females. All the workers you see around are all females. And then at a certain point in the spring, you'll see a lot of ants with wings. Those are the winged reproductives, both female and male. And those are the potential mates. And then once they mate, if they successfully mate, the female goes and establishes the nest, and the male goes off and dies soon after.
No one wants to have sex with you unless you have wings?
Well, that's what they're looking for. And then the wings are considered as like a way to increase genetic mixing so that if they could fly, they could get further away from their nest and mate with ants from colonies.
So they don't inbreed all the time. Yeah,
and so they could get further away.
So I'm very familiar with honeybees. And it, you know, that kind of relationship of queen with drones or males,
yeah.
The same kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's only one queen and the rest, and because the queen is there, all the reproduction is kind of suppressed in all the other workers?
Yeah, well, some of them, they don't have the ability to reproduce. Like, there are certain treatments that they give, basically, in the simplest form, to the eggs, so that the queens, when they're born, the potential queens, when they're born, have a different genetic makeup and potential than the workers. But the sisters, the workers, are all just as related to they're all equally related to each other. And they have this investment in the colony.
Because of that.
And what was I going to say? There's multiple queens in many different species of ants. And then actually there's one species I learned about recently that lives in Brazil, and they're all queens, but they just do this like dominance play. The alpha queen is the one that is like calling the shots at any point in time.
Sounds like the new Disney animated movie is going to focus on that group of ants where they're all queens.
There's a new movie?
I'm guessing. some Hollywood producer is hearing this and
Oh no.
So what kind of sounds are you going to be producing?
Well, the sounds that I'm producing will be from the ant nests and around the ant nests, of locomotion from the ants, stridulation from the ants, possibly percussion. Sometimes they hit their body against surfaces to make sound. And then they do things like attack the microphone, stuff like that, so that you'll hear sounds like that. Or like... yeah, so variations of sounds. So some sounds that they're making that I hope to be recording and amplifying at these installations are intentional communication sounds. Some sounds are just sounds that they happen to make that that might contain information but aren't intended. They're not like, you know.
Yeah. It's fascinating. You know, I love the idea. Do you need a special microphone to get into the anthill?
Yeah, well, I've been experimenting. Well, I generally use contact mics to pick up vibratory sound, but then there's other, Anna and I were talking earlier about these little Loam, the company Loam makes these tiny condenser microphones that are just perfect size to kind of feed into the nest entrance to get into them. And then sometimes I put like a metal stake and then put the contact mic on that so to get deeper into the nest. Or sometimes put it out in the way of their trail and they'll end up coming across it, you know, different ways. And some ants will communicate through vegetation, so you can clip a mic onto the vegetation. And there's other insects that do this as well, but the plant itself is the resonant material that they communicate through. So,
that's so interesting. Yeah. So that you could just record the leaf.
Basically, yeah, you can record, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anna, you've done some projects about animals that transmit. The narwhal, whale, what else? Haven't we had that discussion about animals that have transmission abilities?
Well, I have definitely thought about that with relation to whales. I mean, they're not exactly doing radio, but but there is some thought, for instance, that narwhal tusks, which is like a giant tooth that's grown through, you know, sort of pierce their mouth, is that it's also kind of like an antenna, that it has sensitivity towards vibration, but also changes in temperature in the water, and potentially could pick up electrical fields or something of that sort. Again, these things are also not 100% known, but there is an understanding that narwhal tusks have, you know, it's a sensory device.
It sounds a little like the ant abilities or properties that you were talking about, right? Yeah.
I mean, well, I think a lot of creatures are tremendously tactile, and their whole bodies are sensing, which is also true for us. If we talk about how we listen, you know, we're listening with our whole bodies, even if, you know, often the focus is on the ears. But in fact, you feel vibration through all sorts of your long bones, your skin. Like if you ever go to a loud show and you notice like where the bass hits you in your body, like depending on the frequency, it hits you in a different part of your skeleton. So I think it's useful to think of the senses as being more interrelated, and just to think of ourselves as being sensory. And, you know, in the same way, I think many creatures are sensory. It's just some of their activity is focused in particular areas of interest. So depending also on things like the size of their bodies. So if you're a very large creature, you're maybe more sensitive to very deep sounds. Like, you know, it's easier for you to if you're an elephant, to perceive like very deep, almost infrasound. Whereas if you're an ant, I think that kind of sound would just sort of pass you by to some degree, be more aware of acoustic sounds that were on shorter frequencies. So,
but I would also think that a large animal like a whale or an elephant has a larger instrument to perceive the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whales can hear sounds miles and miles and miles and miles away.
Well, part of that is because the ocean too transmits sound so well.
That's right. But I can't imagine that a little fish would pick up that same amount of information.
Well, this is the interesting thing. I guess it's like if you use your whole body, then you're still sensing with your whole body. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that whale researchers have pointed out is that when there are humpback whales, for instance, like singing or making a continuous long form sound. It kind of illuminates, like, let's say the ocean basin around Bermuda. It illuminates that basin also for other creatures. So it's a way for everything to be able to hear sounds resounding off of the bottom of the ocean or whatever kinds of geographies are underneath there. So so if one creature makes a certain kind of sound, the rest of us who can perceive that sound also learn about the environment because of it.
Yeah.
Is there something like that in the insect world, Lisa?
Well, it's something I've been thinking about. I don't know, but like the oral architecture or like the familiarity with a space through sound, through listening. I've been wondering about that because I'm really interested in this juxtaposition of like human sound and insect sound in so many places, and like how and what frequencies ants and other insects might sense and how it might affect them and everything, and how that affects where they might want to live and where they might want to build their nest. And like, if it's, yeah, there's a lot of questions. There are some studies that I've read about leafcutter ants. I was looking at this recently, that this human sound affected their foraging rates and the sort of efficiency and speed of the different tasks they're doing.
Yeah, there's lots of studies about birds and that too, how like the zone around roadways is like not a bird friendly area.
Yeah. But like, as far as sensing the architecture of the environment through sound, I imagine, but yeah. And some ants use vibratory sound to alert other ants about collapse of tunnels, things like that in their nests, so like changes in the architecture. But
I guess the one thing that whales could do, especially, or any animal that has the sort of sonar capability, is that they can also use that to check out the body of another whale or the body of a human in a scuba suit who swims up near them. So, you know, there's sort of famously these stories of people who are researching sperm whales, and they can feel when the spermaceti organ, like the big sort of melon on the front of the sperm whale, which performs this kind of sonar capability, like when it's actually using that in order to check out your body and figure out like who are you, where are you, that people can really feel that in themselves.
It sounds like a sci-fi movie where the aliens come down and like read your mind through.
Well, they might know things like, are you pregnant, for instance. So there's a lot of things that whales might know about the insides of each other's bodies in a way that we use devices to figure out.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a pause for everyone to take that in. Yeah.
I mean, there's just such cool research happening these days, because I think a lot of researchers are starting to ask different kinds of questions. They're not just like, oh, how do I isolate this particular aspect of a creature and then try to understand how it works? There's a lot more sort of integrated research of like, oh, what's the context for this creature? How does this creature integrate with other kinds of creatures? Maybe let's not assume that they're robots and they don't, let's consider that they have a kind, like that there is culture, not just in human life. I mean, that's not a very, that was not like a popular or even sort of, that was kind of a taboo thing to say even just 15 years ago. But I feel like the taboo is kind of worn off now, and people are a lot more interested in talking about like the dialects of animals and
plants too. Mm-hmm. Right? Plants there's too, a lot of exactly. Stuff about trees and other plants.
Well, we've really moved away from anthropomorphizing animals. You know, so that we're trying to match the animals to our culture and how they're doing it, and we've really expanded our thinking to include them as they are, as opposed to as they should be, because they're not they're human. Based on being human or not.
Yeah, it seems like this point in human history, humans should start mapping their behavior from other animals rather than ourselves.
That's right.
yeah. It's incredible. Like, there's so many fascinating ant-plant relationships. There's basically a whole field of study of that, and the way that they communicate with each other, the ways they do that, and also ants and fungus, too. It's just like the things that they can do, we're like so far from being able to do. They in this complex relations they have.
But ants are, you know, they're not very intelligent. There's not much there. They're really run by chemicals, right?
Well, but then that's kind of getting back to what we were just saying, is like basing intelligence on what we know as intelligence.
Yes, that's
humans,
right?
So
because you can say that about humans too, we're run on chemicals, right?
Well, but I'm thinking of, you know, an insect colony. It becomes a unit, you know, like a beehive.
Yeah.
If you take an individual bee, well, they've got a really short life, and there's not much there. I mean, there is. They're, you know, they'll generate huge amounts of work and all that. But it's the hive that's really the thing that would duplicate and carry genetic messaging forward. And so I would think the same with ants and other kinds of insects.
Yeah. There's definitely, like, I mean, you can say there's intelligence in the individual, but there also is an even larger intelligence.
Yeah, that emergence of all these beings.
Yeah, in the colony. And there's memory in ant colonies between generations, like way after all the workers who learned a thing are gone. Mm-hmm. Like, there would be this information retained.
They're still talking about the flood of 1679.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I guess flooding for ants is a big deal, right?
Well, some of them can swim, and then they do really amazing things, just like plugging up their nests.
Mm.
And they can really withstand a lot of harsh conditions to an extent. Temperature, they're really sensitive to, but if they're evolved to a certain climate and the climate gets inundated with water, the habitat gets inundated with water, there's ants that have surprisingly resistant behaviors that allow them to exist in these places. Yeah.
I've definitely observed that living in California, where it's usually super dry, and then last winter we had these tremendous floods, and I just had ants running into my house like crazy. They're just like, okay, troops!
And they evolve, like the ants in the desert have like longer legs, keep them off the ground, and then they have these like weird baskets underneath their chins, in quotes, to carry like dry grains of sand. I could go on about this.
Oh yeah,
it's super fascinating.
But yeah.
Well, listen, when you're really involved in this particular thing, it's like a, you know, one of those little Debbie dolls that you can pull a string and they'll go, hello, mommy. But, you know, I have the same kind of thing with about beekeeping and mm-hmm. computer science. And, you know, you pull a string, I can go on for hours.
I think we can ask you about ukuleles, too.
Oh, probably. Ukuleles, yeah. We'll definitely talk about ukuleles. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll hear more about this story, not tomorrow, but next Saturday, mm-hmm. right? You're doing the afternoon show. So we'll hear the results of your week mm-hmm. With the ants at Wave Farm.
Yes.
I just have one more question. So where are the ants that you're playing with?
Well, I spent...
Have you met them yet?
I met a few of them today. I was walking down the trail just down that way, and I saw a few like on leaves and then walking across the ground. I saw at least three different species in like 10 minutes.
What kind of ants are here at Wave Farm?
There was a chromatogaster species, which is like this one with this like heart-shaped gaster. The gaster is the abdomen. They have a heart-shaped abdomen. I saw one that was probably some kind of like Formica species, but I'm not sure. And then like another, well, I'm talking to ants hop now, but myrmecine species. a few different species that were kind of walking around in the vegetation. It seemed like looking for sustenance or keeping an eye out. And there were individuals rather than large accumulations of ants. So, yeah. But yeah, there's
so individual scouts as opposed to a train of ants.
Yeah.
Something.
And I'm going to put out baits to try and attract them and then follow them to find their nests and just generally look for nests.
All right. So we'll tune in on September 16th, 15th, something like that, next Saturday for Lisa Schoenberg's the results of.
What time will that be, Tom?
4 to 6 p.m. On the afternoon show. We'll hear the results of your aunt. Spelunking? I don't know. What's the word for what you were
studying?
Wrestling? Studying?
Ant studying? Ant listening?
Listening.
Listening. Right. Ant listening and ant protecting. I'm going to protect.
You're protecting as well as listening.
You're going to shield them. Shield them from
ant
some
shielding.
Of
the, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to hearing what you come up with. It's going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, and we'll talk to you again soon. Cool.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Anna, for joining us and for playing that lovely piece in the last hour.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Devil's Hole Pizza and Ribs has been in business since 1972. They operate out of a mean, one-story building nestled in front of a defunct factory on Niagara Falls Boulevard. The parking lot is cracked and worn, and the sidewalk in front of the door has nearly returned to dirt. The windows are covered by weather-beaten cardboard, and the sign out front was melted by a lightning strike.
Oh, yeah, man, that place has got the haunts. Nobody goes in, nobody comes out, but it's always emanating, like, smell of, like, hot, fresh pizza and blood,
says Ronnie LaHoyt, who owns and lives above a knives and puzzles shop across the street from Devil's Hole. So what the hell is up with this place? Is it haunted, as locals like LaHoyt believe, or is it just bad? I am Zach L. Keebaugh, investigative reporter for Channel 9 Buffalo WZTV News, and I aimed to find out.
You're watching Channel 9 WZTV News Buffalo. Channel 9 WZ. Channel 9 WZTV special feature.
First, though, I had to get out of my motel room. Easy enough, right? Not so fast. The door of my room was one of those hingeless doors, the kind that uses tape instead of hinges. Every time I tried to open it, I could feel something heavy pressing down on the other side. Mattresses.
Mattresses.
Somebody piled 3 or 4 mattresses in front of the door. They were wet too, man. They smelled like waterfall water. Anyway, it took me 20 or 30 minutes to squeeze my way out of a thin space I managed to budge between the frame and the door. Then I knocked the mattresses to the ground where they flopped into a puddle. It was depressing. A guy came around to clean the parking lot, and when I asked him about it, he replied, "What mattresses? I don't see no mattresses." "Dude, there are mattresses stacked up right here," I responded. "I have no idea what you're talking about," he said, and continued unloading trash from his trunk into a pile on a wheelchair ramp. Anyway, I arrived at Devil's Hole Pizza and Ribs at lunchtime. The small, poorly lit seating area was completely empty. Pieces of newspaper littered the floor. It felt like no heat had been on in the place for ages. There was no counter, merely a ragged chasm in the brown paneling that offered a view into the kitchen. A pulpy, middle-aged face suddenly appeared in the breach. "Let's have a pie. Make it a large and rib sub too," I called out. The pulpy face nodded very slightly and then disappeared. I took a seat and looked over the ancient laminated placemat. There was a little maze on it. You had to lead the pepperoni through the maze to the pizza on the other side. That was cool, and it occupied me for a while. It was then that I became aware of complete and total silence. Nothing moved.